With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
What is happening to this market? What is going on? Welcome to Micro and Small Cap News on Friday, 21st November, 2025. I'm Justin Waite. Yesterday, something really odd happened in the markets. Off the back of no news as well, which is quite unsettling because people are looking for answers. So just going back there, immediately after NVIDIA's earnings, the markets rallied, but then they reversed this gain. For example, the NASDAQ was up 2.6%. That's a big jump for an index initially, but closed down 2.15%. So what, over 4%? You know, range in the day. That's quite rare. This is a very bearish indication. NVIDIA's results, you know, were very positive. They beat, they raised, and the market turned negative. Also, if you look at the US futures right now, they were positive. About a couple of hours ago, they were positive. I'm recording this at 11:30. They were positive. And now that's been whittled away. NASDAQ has turned negative. S&P and Dow Jones, let's look at those. They're still slightly positive, but again, not as positive as they were. So a market sort of that starts, you know, positive, then turns negative, you know, even before the futures come out or the end of the day, says to me the bears are winning the argument. And when the bears start winning, sellers increase. And dropping share prices attract sellers. And also, you can't avoid or ignore crypto. It's tanking. Bitcoin is now down 34% in 46 days. It's down to where are we at the moment, Bitcoin? I don't hold any Bitcoin, but it's down to 82,814. Now, it's hard to understand why this is happening, but I suppose you've got to understand what crypto is. As an asset, if it's that, some people don't even say it's an asset, the bears don't. As an asset, it's very high risk. So when there's a lot of worry in the market, the riskiest assets normally get sold off first. So you're thinking, why is crypto risky? They have no fundamental value. Okay, they don't have cash flow or profits or revenue, just perceived value. It's all about what people are willing to pay for them. It's all about momentum based on sentiment, pretty much. If the prices are rising, the bull case becomes the loudest voice, i.e. Bitcoin is going to 1 million. But when it's falling like it is now, the bear case becomes louder, i.e. it's worth nothing. It's trash. So to compound this, there's a lot of sort of complex leveraged instruments in crypto. You know, so strong sell-offs mean people get margin calls and have to sell. This pushes the price down and causes more margin calls and more selling. Is it worth thinking about? Is Bitcoin and crypto the canary in the coal mine? Because it is the riskiest sort of retail traded asset out there. Is it a sign of things to come? And as Bitcoin now is held by a lot of people who not only invest in crypto, but equity too, there's a chance of contagion. So if you're a crypto fan and say your portfolio consists of like over 50% Bitcoin and you're having to sell because you're on margin, you'll obviously look at other parts of your holdings, your portfolio, and you know, consider selling that too. By the way, I bet there's a big crossover between crypto investors and AI investors. So you've got to look at then what's making the most noise next. What's the next riskiest asset out there? And I suppose if you look at the big companies, the AI companies, it's those, because everyone's talking about being, they may not be the riskiest because some of them have excellent balance sheets, you know, huge amounts of free cash flow. Okay, they are taking on more debt to expand these data centers, AI data centers. But there's a worry about the valuations, and it's been, you know, swimming around for a long time. It's been echoing for a long period of time. So this area is more concerning to me because some of the biggest companies in the world are in this space. They make up a huge amount of passive funds, ETFs. So a sell-off in this cohort will definitely cause more contagion. And there's also the worry about just the bull market the American markets have had. This, you know, it's been going up. It's ridiculously been going up since, you know, you had that dip back in February, April about the Trump tariffs. But literally it's been rising for 3 years, pretty much. And when you get that environment, it creates no fear. You know, people think it's only going up. It's never coming down. And therefore people start sort of leveraging, you know, trying to get more profits. I've just listened to Andrew Ross Sorkin's 1929, the crash. I'm not comparing it to that. I'm just saying that was built on leverage. I didn't realize how much leverage was in the markets. These days, there's a lot more regulation out there and all that stuff. But when people start borrowing and investing with leverage, it's very risky, you know? And just an example, margin debt, it's called. It's continued to climb to new highs in October, reaching a new all-time high of $1.18 trillion. This margin debt increase represents a 5.1% rise from September to October. And it's the sixth straight monthly increase in investors increasing their margin debt. This debt level is up 45.2% compared to 1 year ago. That just shows how bullish the markets were in America. Everyone's thinking it's only going up. And of course, any sell-off will be magnified by this margin debt. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a big flush out in the next, you know, week or so, maybe even a day, who knows? But a big flush out could happen in the US indices. So you've got to think, okay, what do I do then? Do I sell now? It may not happen. The markets may go up. You never know. I would say if you are overexposed to one company, it could be emotionally uncomfortable for you, especially if it's in the AI space or whatever, or you've got one fund, you know, exposed to AI or crypto or whatever. It could be very uncomfortable. If you have a diversified portfolio and largely invest in, you know, sound businesses that are generating cash, they have growth and value, then honestly, I would do nothing. I would also not average down on your losing stocks either. Conserve your capital, because I think this run could go down further. If it does go down further, if it does accelerate to the downside, and you'll normally know when this sort of selling's stopped. So what you get normally is a big sell-off, and those sells start to slow, and you get the markets calming out, bottoming for a while, and then, you know, it may take weeks or months, but you may get a big up day. It could only last, it could be just a crash and back up, you never know. And like I said, if you go back to sort of, you know, February, April, one of the worst things to do was to sell at that big low, because it basically accelerated back up at the same pace. But but if it's a normal sort of, you know, sort of sell-off and a bottoming out process happens, then, you know, a rally. And you've got to understand, right, these types of sell-offs are normal. They're part of what happens in the market, especially after a big run to the upside in America. And a dip in the markets between, you know, 5, 10% can happen a couple of times a year. A drop of, say, 10, 20% happens around once every 18 months. A drop greater than 20% is quite rare, but it does happen. But what I would say is this. Whatever the drop, we've seen all these magnitude of drops in the past, and the markets have gone to new highs. And in fact, generally, it's the catalyst for a new run, because money starts to flow back in massively after a big sell-off. It sets the foundation for a new run upwards. I tell you, one of the mistakes I've made in the past is when the markets have gone down, and it gets sort of emotionally hard for you, is selling. Because you normally find, and I've done this in the past, you normally find you'll sell close to the bottom. And what compounds this is that some of the best days are close to some of the worst days. So you get the hard sell, hard sell, hard sell, and then it slows down, hard sell, and you go, oh, I've had enough, I'm getting out. And listen to this. According to JP Morgan Asset Management Research, in all 7 of the market's 10 best days, so 10 of the best days occurred within 2 weeks of the 10 worst days. That's over the last 20 years. So I'll say that again. 10 of the best days occurred within 2 weeks of 10 of the worst days. So keep that in your head. 10, 14, 10. 10 of the best days occurred within 14 days of the 10 best days. So as an example, right, they give an example here. So take, let's say you put £10,000 into an S&P 500 index, okay? If you put that money in on January 3rd, 2005, and left that money untouched until December 31st, 2024, so it's at 19 years pretty much, you'd have amassed $71,750, which is a 10.4% annualized return over that time. And that's largely the average of the S&P 500 index, around about 10%, including all the crashes, all the rallies, you get around 10% return annualized. It compounds up very nicely. Yet, if you'd sold your holdings and missed out on those 10 good days, which were very close to those 10 bad days, your $10,000 would be worth now $32,871. That's a 6.1% return as opposed to 10.4%. Now, you compound that over many years and it adds up. Even then, you've almost, you know, halved the potential. So, you know, stay invested in good business. So think long term. That's all you can do. Whenever you invest in a company, you have to have a time horizon of 3 to 5 years. It's a business. You know, it's improving, hopefully, over time. You know, I say over that time, you will have losers. Guaranteed you'll have losers. That's why I'd say, you know, don't average down on losers because there's something going wrong there. You know, only consider averaging up on winners that are doing well or improving. Like I say, if you hold a decent sort of balance of stocks in your portfolio and a fund or a couple of funds, diversified low-cost funds, over time you will make money. It's the getting too greedy on one stock or going too big on another stock is the problem. So don't panic. Over time you'll be fine. And I say, what you don't want to do is sell at the lows and miss out on those big up days because that really messes with you. You know, double whammy. You're selling at a low and then you miss the big updates as well. Okay, some other bit of news here. The state of this country, man, it's getting worse, isn't it? I question the level of judgment on every aspect that Rachel Reeves has made and Keir Starmer. Just even delaying the budget. They don't see what effect that would have in the economy. Well, now they can see what the effect it's going to have because government borrowing is out today, figures, for October, was it? They borrowed $17.4 billion last month, higher than the forecasts of $15 billion. Now, these are generalised forecasts. All forecasts are saying they're going to borrow about $15 billion. They borrowed $2.4 billion more than was expected. Meanwhile, Reeves wants to push everything via the OBR to make sure she's okay. All the, you know, figures, checks and balances, you know, are ticked, underlined, and a thumbs up. The OBR, who are the most optimistic of all forecasters, they reckon she's only going to borrow $14.4 billion. They were $3 billion out. They are consistently wrong. That's another thing I worry about. She's putting all her homework past the OBR, or casting judgment upon it, and they are consistently wrong. So not only is she wrong, the people she passes on, the OBR, are also wrong. Look at these figures here. Consumer confidence down to minus 19. Previously, it was minus 17. The forecast was minus 18, but even beat that. Core retail sales year on year to October, 1.2%. It was forecast to come in 2.5%. So half. Previously, it was 1.7. What else is there? Yeah, retail sales for the year to year in October, 0.2%. Forecast, 1.5%. That is a huge miss. People are just not spending, are they? They're so worried about the budget. And the fact is, normally we've had the budget by now. you know, in October normally. So there's two strong months where the, you know, people go out spending, and normally good for the economy, for businesses. There's going to be a lot of fallout from this, I think. Unless, you know, people are waiting until after the budget to really start spending on a spending spree, this is really worrying. So even last month, retail sales were 1%. Expected to grow by 50% to 1.5. It dropped to 0.2%. A fifth of what last month was. And Rachel Reeves keeps standing up there blaming everyone else, or the black hole from last government. This is your doing. You've sowed uncertainty into the people's minds of this country, you know, business and consumers, and they're not spending. Absolutely knackered the economy. They will go. I pretty much guarantee Reeves and Starmer will be gone. Reeves probably after the budget, or maybe end of the year. Or if it's not that time, then it'll be in May time when the by-elections come out. And like I said yesterday, I don't know if you saw that, Clive Lewis, is it, I think it is? MP, publicly offering his seat to Andy Burnham to challenge Keir Starmer on BBC Two. That shows the level, the depth of hate within the party for Keir Starmer. Most unpopular Prime Minister in history. And I think the sooner you get it over with, the better, to be honest. But the trouble is, who's going to replace them? That's the sad thing. This is Team A. This is their Team A. Team B are going to be decidedly worse, aren't they? So we need to call a general election, I think. It's dreadful. Okay, let's have a quick look at the markets. Sorry to be so depressing, but sometimes, you know, do you know what's going to come to our rescue? I believe the Bank of England, hopefully, they'll start reducing interest rates. That will help business more than anything else. And they'll have to, I think, because I can't see anyone, no employer is going to be taking on jobs or increasing wages, you know, at the rate they were sort of 2 years ago or a year ago. So inflation will come down. They'll be sort of within their guidance. Of course, it's not towards target, but they're saying that target will be hit in a year, two's time. And I think they'll reduce interest rates. There's no bigger mover of the markets than interest rates. So I think it's got to be Andrew Bailey, the Bank of England, to the rescue. That's all that can happen, I think. In fact, let's look at bond yields here. They're all down today, bond yields, which is, you know, positive sign. Okay. First and foremost, let's look at the markets. FTSE 100 down a third of 1% to 9497. Now that 10,000 level seems distant. Dream, isn't it now? Stock 600 in Europe down 0.6%, 560. The S&P 500, yes, they've down 1.56%. Let's look at the futures a sec. No, it's showing up 0.06%, the futures. NASDAQ is showing down a fifth of 1%, the futures. But like I said, it was down 2.15% after being up 2.6%. The FTSE small cap down 0.75%, 7164. Russell 2000 yesterday was down 1.82%. The FTSE 250 is down at the moment, just shy of half 1% to 0.44%, 21289. What else we got here? The FTSE All World Index. Index, that is, down 0.46% to 635. And the AIM All share, oh, it's down again, 732, down 1.12%. Brent crude is down close to 3%, $62.42 a barrel. Bitcoin, as I mentioned, down 4.83%. Look at that. It's been in the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 11 trading days, it had 9 down days. And it seems like, you know, that acceleration is picking up a little bit. Yesterday it was 5.3% down. Today it's 4.91% down. You always get a little flush as well when the markets are open negatively. What's worrying, if those futures in the US, you know, at the moment Dow Jones is showing up at 31% and the S&P 500 up 0.06%. If those flush to negative, I think the sellers will start really accelerating over the weekend, especially, of course. Coming towards the end of the year, liquidity is down. I think a lot of fund managers understand, right? They're index-based, benchmark-based. They have goals, very short-term goals, quarter-by-quarter goals. They want to be showing positive results on a quarterly basis. So don't think longer term. So if they're up for the year, and this last quarter it's taken a bit of a hammering, they'll just get out of their positions or reduce in some way to show the year was positive. So we're coming towards the end of the year, and some of them don't want, are too worried. Of course, you get massive bonuses, fund managers, all that stuff, wealth managers. And so they don't want to be showing a negative turn for the year. They want a big bonus check. So they're probably going to be lightening their positions. You've got, a month left? Would you take the risk of the markets being higher at the end of the year? You know, if you're talking about £1 million bonus or million dollar bonus, I wouldn't bet that on it. I'd say, play it safe, but a good year. Let's just sell up and say we've, you know, locked in, 20% gain to 30% gain for the year, because it's been a good year. Last quarter has been dreadful, so I'm coming off. I'm taking all the stuff off. So that's the problem you have here. We're coming to the end of the year, and there's risk to the downside, I think. That's the thing about, you know, private investors and hedge fund managers. You know, they jump in and out as much as they can, try and score points on a quarterly basis. Whereas, you know, as an investor long term, you don't need to do that. You can really outperform by just holding on to very good companies, and even, you know, buy the dipping companies sometimes that are, you know, up, you know, in profit, still performing well. They've just been taken down by general market noise, nothing specific to the business itself, and you can buy a little bit more. Anyway, what was I buy? Sorry, this is rattling on, isn't it? Dow Jones down 0.8% yesterday. Dollar index is also up. There's worry now that interest rates are not coming down in the US for a while. Of course, there's a changeover, isn't it? Is it May, I think, next year, where Trump will be having his man in the Fed, which will, you know, I don't know if you saw that rant he had yesterday in Saudi, saying he wants to sack the ass. I want to sack his ass, the Fed. And he said to his guy, he said, if you don't get the interest down to his guy, I can't think of the guy he was talking about. He said, you're doing a good job, but one thing you need to do is get interest rate down. If you don't get interest rate down, I'll sack your ass as well. Anyway, so I think that's going to be coming down. I mean, no one's going to be going to the Fed now. That's quite worrying, though, that the independence of the Fed is being threatened a little bit. Okay, bonds. Let's have a look. 2 year, down 0.45% to 3.7. That's the yield on the 2 year government bond yield. Of course, I assume now they're sort of pricing in interest rates coming down in December. 10 year down 0.8% to 4.5% yield, and the 30 year is down 0.75% to 5.38 yield. A pound will buy you €1.33. It'll buy you $1.30. Gold, it's down 0.6% to 4,034. Still within that kind of range. I've drawn the chart there, top of the range pretty much. I say $4,130 an ounce. And bottom of the range, 3,940. And copper, it's down 0.5%, $4.94 a pound. Anything else? That's it, isn't it? Not much news out today, as is the deal these days on Fridays. Hardly anything comes out. I think let's not release news on Fridays. So first and foremost, Carclo. I always find it hard to say that. Carclo. Anyway, it's a global lead in high-precision components with comprehensive end-to-end manufacturing capabilities, with expertise in spanning mold design, automation, production, assembly, and printing. Supports critical growth sectors, particularly life sciences, aerospace, and optics, with tailored precision solutions. So, where are they today? I think they took a bit of a hit, didn't they, today? Yes, they're down at, 61 pence. In fact, let's change this here. It was an interesting recovery story, this one, Carclo. There was a time when, you know, it was seeming like they could go bust because their debt was piling up. Let me just get back on the page. I just want to change the price there. But that didn't happen. And because of that, you get this near-death experience with some kind of, you know, it's a risky play. It's not the kind of play I do. But if you are in that area and you know about, you know, it's a bit of a fingers crossed thing. And if they come from a near-death, you know, experience, then they rally like hell. It's like, you know, it's like a patient in a bed on the flatlining, and all of a sudden they have a big breath and they jump up and come alive, and then they settle back down, you know. So it's that almost aggressive revival from near death, and you can have a massive rally in the share price on companies like that. But like I say, it's a very high risk strategy. Anyway, at 61 pence a share, they are 44 million market cap, 63 million enterprise value. Shows you, you know, level of debt that they have. What debt have they got at the moment? Last set of results was on the 30th. Oh, so these are half year results, sorry. So they did have a 24 million. In fact, net debt's gone up from the half year. It was at 19 million. Now it's at 24 million. 24.4 million net debt. So anyway, revenue for the half year, this is H1 2026, 57.2 million, down 6%. Net profit of 367K versus a loss of 652K last year. Net debt, 24.5 million, and that's improved a little bit from 25.2 million last year. Free cash outflow of 331,000 versus 3.4 million inflow. Was that inflow last year, was there? Yeah, 3.4 million inflow, so the outflow last year. The board's expectations for the full-year performance remain unchanged as the group maintains the positive momentum established in HY26 throughout the remainder of FY26, with D&E revenues expected to be slightly increased in the second half, continued margin expansion and positive cash generation. So the forecasts are, in fact, the brokers have downgraded revenue and slightly reduced profits. But this is sort of a self-help recovery story with companies, like I said, it was on the brink of going bust, but now it looks to be on a more stable pathway to growing margins and profitability. So profit top line is expected to grow or dip by 2% for the year, 119 million. Net profit is expected to jump by 301% to 3.5 million. Puts them on a PE of 13, but an EV earnings of 18. That included debt, of course. For 2027, 5% top line growth, 125 million, and 54% net profit growth to 5.4 million, a PE of 8, EV earnings of 12. And for 2028, again, 5% top line, 131 million, and 33% to 7.2 million net profit growth. So at one point, this company, that's good value there going further out. At one point, this company was stupid cheap due to the uncertainty of its existence. Since this worry has faded, the shares have rallied strongly and has now reverted to mean a little bit. But like I said, the risk and the reward is very high when there's worry about the covenants, debt covenants, you know, being breached. And then it could be, you know, could collapse into administration. But it came okay. And like I said, they're focusing on efficiency, margins. So I would say it's not cheap on 2026 numbers. But if it delivers 27, 28, and the share price stays where it is or dips on wider market negative sentiment, then it may be worth a look. But yeah. Next, Knights Group. So the ticker is, by the way, Carclo is C-A-R. Ticker there. Knights Group is KGH, fast-growing legal and professional services business, ranked within top UK's 50 largest law firms by revenue. Knights is one of the first law firms in the UK to move from the traditional partnership model to corporate structure in 2012 and has since grown rapidly. So at 171, let me just check the share price at KGE. Yeah, 168 is fine. At 171 a share, there are 147 million market cap, enterprise value of 211. This is a trading update, I think. Was it? Yes, a trading update for Knights. Last set of results was the 30th half year, sorry, the full year to the 30th of the 4th of April 2025. They did have net debt of 64.8 million there. What do they say? They said H1 trading update. This is our H1 for 26. The group is expected to deliver a 30% increase in revenue from continuing operations to 103.2 million and a return to organic growth of 3% in the first half. So KGH is acquisitive. They acquire, you know, law firms and all that stuff. So top line growth, including these acquisitions, are up 30%, but organic growth is only 3%. Group underlying PBT margin at 16%, that's down from 18%, is broadly in line with our internal forecasts as we absorbed higher payroll taxes as anticipated and continue to invest in AI technology. Also, due to these acquisitions, there are a lot of adjustments mentioned in the figures. It's a bit of a bugbear of mine. I like brokers. In fact, a lot of brokers now obviously listen to the podcast. But please state reported and adjusted, okay, so we can see the difference. It helps a lot. In fact, I've got to say, most brokers now do that. And very much appreciated because, the company will state adjusted all the time. I think, well, okay, what's the reported? By the way, the adjustments are meant to remove the costs of acquisitions, all that stuff, to show you a cleaner version of the profits that would be attributable to the company going forward, down the line, So it's handy to have adjusted. You see, okay, that's what they would be in. But it's also handy to have what will come out, in the reported numbers. By the way, what was a bit vague was group underlying PBT margin 16 is broadly in line with our internal forecasts as we absorb higher payroll taxes. Although this, I assume, is down to national insurance, so we baked into the future forecast. But looking up, decent growth here. So 2026, looking at top line growth of 24%. Of course, this is including acquisitions, but they have some debt nevertheless. The shares at 171, not expensive. So net profit expected to be 26, up 47%, 11.1 million. So that's 47% up. Yeah, so PE of 13, EV earnings of 19, so a bit of debt there. 2027, 6% top line. 213.4 million, net profit of 18.7 million, up 68%, and then it gets to 171 a share, it's a PE of 8, EV earnings 11. And then 2028, I think, if it's accurate that far out, 222.4 million, that's 4% growth, top line, net profit growth is 20% to 22.5 million, that would put them on a PE of 7, EV earnings of 9. And by the way, I mentioned that they do state the group has signed an extension to the HSBC and AIB and NatWest to extend its current revolving credit facility of 100 million for an additional year until November 2028. So there's no real worry about the debt, and that's a cash generative. Going forward, profit growth is expected to expand by double digits, putting them on a decent valuation. So I think Knights, any dips there, maybe worth a watch. KGH's ticker. That's it for me. Sorry, got a bit of windy pops there. Have a nice weekend. Hopefully it'll get a bit warmer over the weekend. It's been freezing here. My wife keeps sending me pictures of our, smart meter. Said, how are we using this much gas? Yesterday we used, we moved to this house, had it renovated, but it's quite open planish, so it's not very efficient heating-wise. And so yesterday, I think we did about 22 quid in gas electric for one day. So I said, yeah, this has been sub-zero overnight, so obviously heating kicks in. And I've been in my office with the heater on here, but hopefully it's warmer over the weekend. Apparently, look at 1% a day, 1 degrees today, tomorrow 10%, 10 degrees. That's a huge change, isn't it? I think that it was currently 1% when I looked at it, and the mid-range tomorrow is a 10 degrees. So anyway, it's getting warmer, so heating bills will come down. Thanks for listening. By all means, go to sharepickers.com if you want to join the club. 40% off, and that is literally half the price of a pint. £2.88 a week, that's all. And like I said, what I'm covering on here is I'm just scraping the surface. There's loads more detail and information you can absorb from the website. And like I said, by all means, sharepickers.com. Have a nice weekend. Speak to you next weekie.
The Share Pickers Podcast with Justin Waite. The content of this podcast is not intended as investment advice. It is for information purposes only. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.